JC Corcoran Podcast.
Girl on marijuana. She said, if I'm not stoned, I don't wanna. But she got so paranoid, her place I would avoid. As in love with a girl on marijuana. As in love with a girl on cocaine. She had everything going but her brain. We'd talk endlessly for hours, but by morning it'd go sour. I was in love with a girl on cocaine. Through ecstasy, crystal meth and glue, I found no drug compares to you. All these pills, all this weed, I don't know just what I need. I was in love with a girl on LSD. She'd see things I'd never see. She broadened her perspective. Then I got more selective. I was in love with a girl on LSD. Through ecstasy, crystal meth and glue, I found no drug compares to you. All these pills, all this weed, I don't know what I need. I was in love with a girl who drank beer till bad breath and all, she disappeared. She was blowing up real bad, but when she left I was still sad. I was in love with a girl that drank beer. I was in love with a girl on China Way. We were married for a year one night. Her memory still lingers, 'cause I burned all my fingers. I was in love with a girl on China Way. Love with a girl who drank coffee. There's times when I couldn't keep her off me. That caffeine got her going, but her ugly side was showing. I was in love with a girl who drank coffee. I was in love with a girl who was a dealer. I was afraid somebody'd come and steal her. We never used to fight, but the phone rang day and night. I was in love with a girl who was a dealer. Sure as hell, she got popped by the big guys.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Monday, June 20th, 2022, 144 days remaining in our American democratic system of government. As we have known, how you doing, kids? It's JC. You are at jcontheline.com. So pissed I had to miss the Mr. Blue Sky show at the Wildy Theater in Edwardsville over the weekend. Our buddy Jeff Faulkner and Abby Stahlschmidt and the rest of the people in the band. You go to see that show. It's like 11 people on stage. You get an incredibly full sound when you go see that show. Well, it is the Electric Light Orchestra, after all. All right, where do you want to start? Getting a lot of questions about the Franco Pinion lawsuit. This happened late last week, so you may have missed it. This is not a charge. This is an actual judgment. In other words, there's finality to this. It's over now. And basically what happened is on KTRS in the afternoon show, Franco Pinion, and he and I have become friends over the last 2 or 3 years. We hated each other's guts for the first 36 years we knew each other, and that's all changed. I see Frank in a different light now. He sees me in a different light, and now we get along. So what happened is one of the guys who's a member of the show, he ran the control board for the most part and put in the sound effects on the show and stuff like that. He had been with Frank for something like 19 years and loses control of his personal situation, presumably, and ends up in rehab. I don't know what kind of rehab it was, but he was in rehab. The only problem was that was, I apparently never agreed upon that that would become public knowledge. And so when Frank went on the air and repeatedly made jokes about it on the radio station, the young man involved basically said, I'm suing you for invasion of privacy, whatever the case may be. And, you know, the thing was in court for 5 years in the court system. And the other day, like I said, I think it was a Thursday, the judgment came down, a $2 million judgment in favor of the young man who claimed that he had his privacy invaded. Well, the weird part is that even Franco Pinion, even though Franco Pinion was the guy doing the talking, he was excused from any culpability in all of this. Meaning the radio station's got to pay the $2 million, $175,000 for the judgment, and then $250,000 in punitive damages. So over the weekend, I found out some of the details of this very, very unusual case and very unusual judgment. And there are a couple of elements in the equation that are sort of on the personal side, and I don't want to get involved in that. But apparently, one of the determining factors was the fact that you have to understand something. In some cases, like my last radio station, I worked there 5 years, but I was not an employee. That place never wrote me one check in the entire 5 years. I was an outside contractor, and I sold my own advertising and took all the money from the sale of those commercials. That was the deal they offered me, and that was the deal that I took. Well, it's the same thing, and that's happening more and more with people at the radio stations that are not like the big corporatized ones. And a lot of people are doing that in radio now. You end up not having a salary. The radio station pays you nothing, but you go out and you sell your own advertising, and that's the way it works. Well, apparently, there was a legal technicality in all of that because Franco Pinion was never an employee of KTRS either. And so, you know, from a legal technicality issue, when the radio station sent memos to Frank, and this is how it was explained to me. I'm assuming it's true. When they would send him emails saying, hey, you got to cut this out, because he was never an employee, the radio station didn't really have any jurisdiction over the content of the show. And so apparently the court said if somebody was going to do something about this, it should have been the radio station. And if that explanation seems counterintuitive, that's the legal system for you. It ain't perfect. But I may have mentioned last week, I sent him a text and I said, I want your lawyer, because I don't know how this happened this way. And he just basically said, 5 years of legal fees, but it was all worth it. So it would appear to be the case. Apologies, everybody listening to the JC Roots of Rock Sunday show on K-Wolf 101.7 in the Westplex. And hopefully, if everything goes right, we're maybe a week, 10 days. There's a possibility it could be the end of this week that we will turn on the St. Louis signal at 101.5. If you go to 101.5 right now, there's nothing there. There's no point in going there. It's just static. But in a couple of days here, as soon as we get the FCC stuff taken care of and everything like that, I am told that it could be as early as the end of this week. So, but if you were listening to the oldie show yesterday, the computer, you load audio into a computer. I don't do the show live. You load audio into the computer and then you just cross your fingers because sometimes computers, especially when you got a new show and the computer isn't used to running that show, and so what it does is play two things at one time, which it did four or five times yesterday. All I can say is apologies. We're getting this worked out. Everything is brand new. This is why the radio station is not on the air in St. Louis County yet, because we're sort of working out the kinks in some of the new stuff that we're going to be putting on the air. It's sort of like the equivalent of doing a soft opening for a restaurant. You know, you before you open to the general public, you have a couple of run-throughs. That's sort of what's going on right now. But as I said, we are I'm told that we are potentially just a couple of days away. So I'm sorry for all the drama and for, you know, the delay in this whole thing, but you're going to love it. So just hold on, and when it finally gets here, this radio station is going to be something I think you're really, really going to enjoy. Somebody with the Cardinal organization might want to mention to Drew Verhagen that Memphis is very nice this time of year, because I have a suspicion that he's going back there. Just a complete collapse of the Cardinal bullpen yesterday afternoon in Boston. But you can't strike out 14 strikeouts that the Boston pitchers rung up on the Cardinals, including at one point in the game, 7 strikeouts in a row. You don't win a lot of ball games doing stuff like that. So the Red Sox took 2 of 3, and now it's off to Milwaukee, and then the Cubs come in, and the Cubs just finished a 10-game losing streak? But you know what happens when the Cubs and Cardinals get together. I've often said both teams could be 160 games out of first place on the final weekend of the season, and they would still beat each other's brains out. So that'll be fun in St. Louis, and here comes the heat again, especially tomorrow. I think they're saying 103 tomorrow. By the weekend, when the Cubs get to Busch Stadium, the temperature should moderate just a little bit. Tomorrow's the first day of summer, by the way. Like that even means anything anymore. I will have a review of the new Elvis movie coming up on Wednesday's show. Saw the movie last week and still drawing up some of the review points. And like I said, we'll have that for you on Wednesday's podcast here at jcontheline.com. Stanley Cup playoffs continue tonight. Pat Maroon and his boys from Tampa got blown off the ice on Saturday night. Colorado's up 2-0. Please, please don't allow Stan Kroenke to win a Super Bowl and a Stanley Cup 5 months apart. Please. So the ABC poll yesterday released on Stephanopoulos' show said that only 9% of people are following these January 6th subcommittee hearings. Only 9%. 60% of Americans believe that Donald Trump should be brought up on criminal charges, but a whopping 40% say no. Then again, if only 9% are paying attention, well, they don't know the facts. They don't know what's going on. They don't even know what was said last week. If they knew that, that 40% might drop a little bit. But this is Watergate all over again. It was fascinating to watch all this stuff again. And one of the, you know, I was in college when Watergate was going on, and I told people, I said, it took years for people to understand the gravity of the Watergate scandal and understand the seriousness of the whole thing. Nobody cared. Nobody cared. Nixon got reelected in a landslide in the middle of the entire Watergate investigation. And then all of a sudden, Alexander Butterfield said, yeah, there's tapes of all of this. And then John Dean, his testimony about there being a cancer on the presidency. And then all of a sudden, people started paying attention, and the polls swung the other way, and that was the end of Nixon. After 9/11, I had an avalanche of response from listeners, and I mean like an avalanche of people. JC, you don't know what you're talking about. JC, you're uninformed. You should just play the music and not talk about politics. You got this all wrong. You know what I had all wrong? I said Saddam Hussein didn't have anything to do with 9/11. For the first few years after 9/11, people thought that Saddam Hussein was the guy who attacked us on 9/11. You know why? Because the Bush administration kept saying it over and over again. And then finally, they got him on something like Meet the Press or Face the Nation, and the reporter said, just to be clear, Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11, right? And he was like, yeah, that's right. But it took years for people. There's probably still people out there who think Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11. So I've seen this story before, okay? I've seen this before where the American public, they're more interested in the Kardashians than anything. And until they start paying attention to what's going on, then you'll start to see the poll numbers change and the walls will start closing in on Donald Trump. At least that's what I think. But again, I've got history on my side. I know a lot of people don't get up and watch the Sunday public affairs shows. I do. And I thought that you'd at least want to hear Woodward and Bernstein as the 50th anniversary of Watergate sort of wraps up. Here's what they said yesterday.
George Washington's farewell address, 1796. And he warned in that speech that democracy is fragile and unprincipled men will seek and take the presidency. And we have to be worried about it. And we looked at that in Nixon, and then you see Trump comes along with his own version of unprincipled.
Watergate had a profound effect on the United States and on our government and on our culture, and it continues to half a century later. Will democracy survive? Question mark.
Will democracy survive? Question mark. And they had bad looks on their faces. You think there's people who criticize me. Well, JC, this, you do this every show. You know, you say, you know, Monday, June 20th, 144 days remaining. Well, there's so much stuff going on behind the scenes that are going to affect the outcome of elections. It's all going to start this fall. And in 2024, I may just get on a boat and start sailing south. Going to be pretty. All right, next soundbite comes also from Stephanopoulos yesterday. Janet Yellen, Secretary of the Treasury, and people have been critical of her too. What is causing inflation to go nuts? Why are the gasoline prices in particular off the scale? Her explanation makes sense.
The American Petroleum Institute is pushing back on the president's call for refiners to increase production. I want to share with their president, Mike Summers, said on Wednesday. Said the administration's misguided policy agenda, shifting away from domestic oil and natural gas, has compounded inflationary pressures, added headwinds to companies' daily efforts to meet growing energy needs while reducing emissions. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't think that policies are responsible for what's happening in the oil market. Consumption of gas and fuels are currently at lower levels than pre-pandemic. And what's happened is that production has gone down. Refinery capacity has declined in the United States, and oil production has declined. I think that producers were partly caught unaware by the strength of the recovery in the economy and weren't ready to meet the needs of the economy. High prices should induce them to increase supplies over time. And look, it's a medium-term matter. The way in which we can assure reasonable energy expenses for households is to move to renewables to address climate change as a medium-term matter. That's the way to free us from geopolitical movements in oil prices.
Translated, we're fucked. And there's not much that anybody in government can do about it right now. There's just cheap shot after cheap shot going after Joe Biden. And I try to tell people, it doesn't matter who the president is. It could be Donald Trump in there. Same thing would be happening right now. Except he'd figure out somebody to blame for the whole thing. All right, like I said, we do politics on the podcast only when it is unavoidable and has been unavoidable. I have one thing to play for the local news, and then I got something really funny to play for you. This is a soundbite. See, I know what's coming. This is a soundbite from Channel 5's 9 o'clock news yesterday morning.
And we have an important update to a breaking news story from last night. St. Louis Metropolitan Police have corrected the age of a homicide victim in North City last night. Police previously reported that the victim was 14 years old. The victim was actually a 31-year-old woman.
14-31. Come on. Picky, picky, picky. All right, and then finally, you'll hear Colbert do the setup on this, but then I'm going to play something for you afterwards. The
committee also heard from former federal judge and William Shatner melting on a hot sidewalk. J. Michael Luttig. Judge Luttig is one of the most widely respected conservative legal scholars in the country, and today he laid out the stakes of this attempted coup.
The foundational truth is the rule of law. That foundational truth is, for the United States of America, the profound truth. But it's not merely the profound truth for the United States. It's also the simple foundational truth of the American Republic.
All right, now, a couple of things. His testimony was fantastic, and, you know, he was already identified as one of the great thinkers in the conservative movement and in all of conservative politics. It's just that he doesn't have much of a talent, I guess you would say, in public speaking. That doesn't mean he's stupid. It doesn't mean he's incompetent. It just means that's not his forte. But on the other hand, it sure was funny. And that's why people were laughing. As a matter of fact, the reason you heard the laughter at the end of the bit is because when they cut back to Colbert, he was wearing this giant, long, gray beard. So the reason I played that for you today is the reason I'm playing this. So years ago, I found this and I put it on the air. And I just thought it was absolutely hilarious. But then the radio stations are like, you can't really be playing comedy records, you know, a 3-minute cut on the radio station. It's just it doesn't work on radio. So I'm playing for you on the podcast. And that's one of the joys of doing this, is that you can sort of do whatever you want without somebody standing over you telling you you can't do it. So Bob and Ray were a comedy team. They actually had an afternoon radio show in Boston for many, many years, and then New York for a while, but Bob and Ray, and then they were so funny that they would occasionally go on national TV, like on The Tonight Show and stuff like that. Now, Ray Goulding passed away years ago, but Bob Elliott, is he still alive? I have to double check that, but he is the father of Chris Elliott, who, of course, became famous late night with David Letterman, and then later, he had a daughter who grew up to be Abby Elliott, and she became a cast member on Saturday Night Live. But her grandfather, Chris Elliott's dad, Bob Elliott, is part of that comedy team of Bob and Ray. So now, here's the bit. Normally, when you're going to interview somebody famous, or even not famous for that matter, you know, there's a lot of local cable access shows and things like that, and a lot of YouTube stuff now. But usually you got a fistful of paper, you know, bios and all the accomplishments and the resume and the whole thing, so that you can get some idea of who this person is, what they're all about, and what sort of questions you might want to ask. And even on the big television talk shows, they have something called the pre-interview. So let's just say Tim Allen shows up on Jimmy Fallon, okay? He's already engaged in something called a pre-interview with one of the producers or segment coordinators or something like that. And they sit and they go, all right, Mr. Allen, thank you very much for coming. We're very, very excited to have you. We know we want to talk about your new movie. Can you tell us anything about something funny that happened on that? They go, oh, yeah, well, this happened, this happened. Well, then they put that in the show notes, and then they give it to Jimmy Fallon. So he sits there and he goes, what? Tell me about this thing where you were doing this TV show and a fire broke out in the middle of it. And then, of course, Tim Allen tells the story. That's how that stuff works. So by the time you see the interview on the air, there's already been a lot of back and forth in terms of exchanging information about, you know, we got 6 minutes here, let's make it good. Well, here's the comedy bit. What if, because of some sort of extenuating circumstances, somebody had to interview someone knowing nothing about them? Not a thing. Bob and Ray.
I haven't had an opportunity to meet and talk with our next guest here. So would you tell us your name and where you're from, sir?
Harlow, P. Whitcomb. From Glens Falls.
New York? Glens Falls, New York?
New York. I am president and recording.
Secretary, right? Recording secretary.
Secretary of the STOA.
What does that stand for?
The Slow Talkers of
America. America, right? America. America. America.
We believe in forming our thoughts, ideas, opinions thoroughly
before speaking, so you'll never be misunderstood, right?
Before uttering them.
So you'll never be misunderstood.
So that we will never be misunderstood. We are here in Los Angeles attending our annual
convention. Your annual convention, right? You're here for an annual convention.
Membership
meeting.
Convention. All 200
members.
And 50
members.
Seven
members.
Members are here talking
slowly. All talking slowly.
As opposed to the members of the F.
T-O-A.
T-O-A. O-A.
A.
The fast
talkers of America.
Talkers
of America. America.
We have a credo.
Which each new member must learn.
Absolute brilliance. Comedic brilliance. And now you get an idea of how Chris Elliott turned out the way he did. God, that's funny. Jeez. Speaking of late night TV, I'm dying to see what happens tonight on Colbert. Triumph the Insult Comic Dog and crew members from Colbert's show were arrested Thursday night by Capitol Police, charged with illegal entry. Now, obviously, Triumph the Dog wasn't really arrested, but the man behind the dog, Robert Smigel, was. They were at the Capitol to record interviews for a comedy segment. Everything was authorized. Everything was prearranged. But after they wrapped up the interviews, they stayed around to do what they call pickup shots, you know, stuff that you have to use in editing and stand-ups and other stuff. Well, a statement from the Capitol Police said, quote, the building was closed to visitors and these individuals were determined to be a part of a group that had already been directed by the police to leave the building earlier in the day. This is an active criminal investigation and may result in additional criminal charges after consultation with the U.S. attorney. Wow. Wow. That's like semi-serious right there. All right, late night tonight, in addition to Colbert and Senator Cory Booker and what should be a very interesting follow-up to all that, we got Jimmy Fallon with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Kristen Bell. That's going to be interesting because she's like 5'1", and he's like 12 feet tall. Jenny Slate and Sean Hayes, he's going to be the guest host for Jimmy Kimmel. Dave Leal Dicky Bird on with James Corden. I guess I'm supposed to know who that is. Adam Scott on with Seth Meyers. Will Forte from Saturday Night Live is going to star in a darkly comedic thriller that Barack and Michelle Obama are producing for Netflix. Chrissy Hynde, one of my all-time favorites, says she's done playing Pretenders hits and ballads. That's it. Nicole Kidman, 55 today. Michael Anthony of Van Halen, 68. John Goodman, the Pride of Afton, Missouri, is 70. Lionel Richie, 73. Bob Vila from This Old House, 76. Ann Murray, your Aunt Minnie from Portland, just loves her. She's 77 today. And talk about geniuses. We were talking about comedic geniuses. The guy who really has earned that title, Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, today is 80 years old. And you probably heard about this Motley Crue reunion tour, and turns out Tommy Lee is dropping out of the whole thing. I'll tell you this, whoever replaces him has an awfully big penis to fill. With that, I snorted, guys. With that, that's it. The J.C. Corcoran podcast for Monday, June 20th, 2022 is in the can. 144 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. We publish a little bit after 7 o'clock every weekday morning. We archive everything. You may email me at jc@jconline.com. Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. It was on this date in 1985. I had my waterbed delivered to my house in Baldwin from the waterbed store. For the rest of your life, it's the waterbed store. Although I've made it into some of the most famous commercial jingles in town.
For a hole in your head or a whole new head, J.C. Corcoran.
Kelly Wilde, I adore you. I absolutely adore you. All right, have a great day, everybody. Tomorrow, the heat really cranks up again. 103 tomorrow, so you got something to do outside. Do it today, even though today isn't going to exactly feel like it's November out. And with all that, in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.